When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Roscoe, and welcome to the latest King's Anglia Ipswich Town podcast on location special. If you're watching on video, you can see we're at the Humber Bridge in Hull after last night's 2-0 win for Kieran McKenna's men. I'm joined by Stuart Watson and Alex Jones, my boys. We are sitting here, Humber Bridge in the background. Let's start with you, Stu. You're our sort of creative director for these on location podcasts. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm a travel agent, taxi driver, and what was my title, Alex, on this one? Creative director.
Creative director.
Yeah, when we booked the hotel in Hessler?
Yeah.
Hessel, just outside of Hull, I thought, let's get ourselves down to the river, Humber Bridge in the background, and a bonus bin as well for the viewers just over our shoulders.
Yes, indeed. So that's why you should subscribe. We've got a latest offer to see us if you're listening on audio. But AJ, my friend, Town made it 6 games unbeaten, 3 successes away wins. That makes this podcast even more special because we're talking about a win. But how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, here we go. Going to pass the microphone around. Yeah. Welcome to Hessel, which, you know what? I think we've done quite well here. Stu's booked a lovely hotel. I had a little look in the map to spot any benches we could record from, and... I think between us, led by, as we mentioned, our creative director, who probably scouted out the location with this very Premier Inn that we stayed at, we've done quite well. So it's a busy week ahead, of course. This will not be our only on-location podcast, as far as I'm aware, at least. We'll have a few others, even if they end up being in hotel rooms or something. But I think we can be especially proud of this one and where we've ended up.
Indeed. We're going to pass the mic. Hopefully it's not too windy. A bit of a chilly... winter's day in Hull, but its sun is shining. And Stu, I want your snap thoughts on Town's 2-0 win, clean sheet as well, which was lovely. Big shout out to Kellen Brissett, who mentioned September 2024 was the last away Town clean sheet, so nice little stat there. But yeah, over to you, my friend.
What was that, the 0-0 at Brighton? Yep. In the Premier League when Aaron Muric,
yeah, won a class.
Had a good game, feels like a long time ago now. I think Axel Tuanzebe was up there and shutting down Matoma that day, wasn't he? That feels like a long time ago. The first back-to-back clean sheets. Do you know when? Oh, I tested Alex on this morning, but I'll ask you, Ross.
Oh, would have surely been in the championship.
Yeah,
last time.
Yeah.
Was it the QPR, like the December period?
That was Alex's first guess this morning. You've gone too far back there. Towards the end of that season.
Do we draw against Watford?
No, you've gone too far forward.
Now you've gone too, yeah. You've thrown a lot of nil-nils at me. The answer is the 6-0 win against Sheffield Wednesday, followed by the 1-0 at Blackburn on Good Friday. Wow. Last time, back-to-back clean sheets for Ipswich Town. Snap thoughts on last night's game. Bit of a pig of a match for 70 minutes, really, wasn't it? But Ipswich... found a way to win. And what did I say? Successful teams find a way to win when not at their best. That was certainly the case last night.
Indeed. Snap thoughts from you, AJ, before we hear from Kieran McKenna on the 3 points away from home.
Yeah, we came across a tweet in the press box, which was from the first 20 minutes, saying this is the worst 20 minutes of football I've ever seen. And I sat there and I thought, you know what, I think it's been quite good. And ever since I thought of that, from the 20th minute onwards, it just descended into absolute terrible football. Neither could kind of hold on to the ball. Passes were sloppy. It just did not feel like a game between the second top scorers in the division and the pre-season title favourites with a squad worth of like more than 200 million or whatever. It didn't feel like that at all. But as Stu says, you have two moments where you come up with some quality, some good play from those who come off the bench, and that is ultimately the difference. You don't have to be at your best week in, week out. Ipswich are not at a point where they've got snazzy attacking play and defensive solidity. So if you're able to have the solidity at the back and then have one or two moments that you can take, that's what gets you the points. And I think if you'd offered a 2-0 win away at Hull before we made the trip yesterday, I think we all would have been very happy with that.
Yes, indeed. I'm just looking at AJ. He's got a nice scarf on.
Thank you, yeah.
Stu's got a hat. I should have wore something wintry. I just got my nice big orange coat. You call me the orange...
Our little glass of orange that we've got here. Yeah, I haven't gone with the coat, which is a bit of a concern, mainly because we're on a slightly soggy bench, and yeah. I didn't want to sit on the soggy bench, so I've sat on my coat instead. So it's going to be a bit of a chilly podcast, this.
Yeah, me and Stu have gone right deep in the soggy bottom territory. Let's hear from Kieran McKenna on the win.
Kieran, congratulations. Not a lot in that, probably not a classic for a long period, but you found a way to get the goals and get the win.
Yeah. I thought we showed the qualities that you need on, you know, some nights like this, games in the Championship, midweek, on a difficult pitch, difficult surface. Both teams really struggled to get to grips with it in the first half. And showed some good learning as a group there, because, you know, we've spoken about it plenty now, but in those times when it's not perfect, like the first half, and we couldn't really get the control that we wanted to, you have to stay intense, you have to stay together, your defensive organisation needs to be really good. I thought it was. I thought we pressed really well all night, made it really hard for Hull to build as well, and they've been, you know, a really good attacking force. Really stopped them playing through the pitch at all. The only giveaways we give really were a couple of poor moments on the ball, but in terms of our defensive organisation was excellent. Mentality at half time was good, knew that we could push on in the game, and improved in the second half, found a rhythm on the ball a bit better, adjusted to the conditions better, and then you see when we get the first goal a big difference. The confidence sort of grows in the team, and the opponent sort of gives you a little bit more space and stops defending quite as hard. And from that moment on, we looked like we could score any number of goals, and we still kept the defensive resilience. So yeah, we know it wasn't perfect tonight, but again, one of the biggest learnings for me, for the group, for the club, again, over this last month or two as a group, has to be, it isn't going to be perfect. It wasn't like that when we got 97 points and we had a team that had played together for 2 years. So, you know, it's how we are in the tough moments, how we are when it's not perfect. That in the end will be decisive. So I think for to come out with a win tonight and a clean sheet in that sort of setting, I think is a positive.
Well then, Stu, that's Kieran McKenna on Town's win. I want to start off with the changes. We got the McKenna rotation bingo. Centre-half change, midfielder change, the forward four change. Thoughts on it?
Always sounds dramatic. Yeah. We had this conversation so many times already this season, and it's going to continue. Kieran McKenna has made it clear that he's built a squad with like-for-like quality in so many departments, and that hopefully is going to be Ipswich's super strength over the course of the season, but certainly over the next few weeks, months, when it's really busy, and hopefully others, you know, feel that as injuries and suspensions by Ipswich, that rotation, that freshness will carry them through. Another way you can always sort of put a different twist on it. I think it was one change from the Swansea 4-1. It's a different way of looking at it. I think we're going to quite often see the front four change in its entirety fairly regularly. Kajusta for Taylor probably wasn't a great surprise, given Jack Taylor, I thought, dipped a little bit in the Wrexham game. Probably the biggest surprise sort of debate really is around centre-half. Greaves coming back in, former club, of course, back at Hull. Personally, I don't like rotation in centre-halves. I think that's one area of the team where you really benefit from a settled partnership. But you can't say it's harming Ipswich at the moment, Greaves had a good game at Swansea. Kipra came back in and was solid against Wrexham. Greaves had a good game last night. So, while you're winning games, that the rotation debate will disappear. And then as soon as you have one slightly frustrating afternoon, it will all get whipped up again. But ultimately, it paid dividends again last night, didn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And AJ, you're not being dropped. You're just going to be ready to be that finisher. Just your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree on the centre-half thing. I know Stu's been quite strong on it from the start in terms of not liking the rotation. And I've kind of seen the other side to it. But actually, more over time, I've sided with that opinion of I'm not that keen on it. But as he says, and as we've said for the last few weeks, while the results are positive and Ipswich are 6 unbeaten now and chopped and changed in the last 3-4 games or so with changing the centre-backs, then there's not really that much criticism to be had. There's always a couple of surprises in there, but when I went through and picked the team, when Mark did his predicted lineup, he got it spot on. I was one off because I thought Sindra would start. It's kind of easy to see now maybe some of McKenna's thinking, especially with this run, and we say it to the ends of the earth, you know, 7 games in 22 days, isn't it? That's an incredibly busy run. That's where you need to keep people fresh and use the depth, because there's probably not a squad in the Championship that has the depth of Ipswich Town this season. So, I'm intrigued to see how they'll go for Friday. But in terms of this one, I think you could see a lot of it coming. It gives opportunities to some players. And McKenna had also said after the Wrexham game as well, back whoever goes out and plays on plays in midweek. That's probably kind of where they're thinking with McAteer coming in. I could kind of see that one and some others who got opportunities hasn't quite clicked for them so far this season.
Yeah. And you mentioned Heafy. He obviously, he got the lineup correct. He also got the first goal scorer correct. So he's very smug, I'm sure. He's now, I think, maybe joint top in the leaderboard now, because he obviously gets...
We all level points. On points together now.
I don't think I am, because I went for a draw. Me and Stu went for a 2-2 draw. So, and last time we went to Hull, Stu, it was an entertaining 3-3 draw, an incredible game. The first half was not showing that. Just your thoughts on that, because it was really poor. Both teams in possession, a lot of mistakes, and you know, and McKenna mentioned about the surface as well, didn't he?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, you just mentioned our predictions there. We've all gone for high scores. We came off the back of the 0-0 against Wrexham at the weekend and said, well, Tuesday's going to be completely different. Hull are wide open. They score loads of goals. They concede loads of goals. Ipswich have been scoring away from home. Maybe it will be up there in terms of entertainment, as you say, that last time we came up here for that incredible 3-3 draw. Amari Hutchinson with those two fantastic goals right at the back end of that promotion season. Kieran McKenna thumping the perspex of the dugout. I mean, that's probably one of the best games of football from a neutral perspective that I've ever watched, probably, covering Ipswich Town. And we were hopeful that that was going to be the same again last night. How wrong we were. As I've touched on it already, I mean, that right up until Ipswich getting that first goal, that game was dire. And you said Kieran's touched upon the difficult playing surface. It's always hard for us to judge. I don't know what it was like pitch side for you, Ross. You might have a better insight. But from up high, we can't always kind of tell on the quality of the surface. But that can't be the only reason why neither team could find a teammate. They were both as bad as each other in terms of unforced errors. And there was a moment right at the end of that first half that summed it up for me. And it wasn't the first time that the whole keeper booted the ball out of hands all the way through to Christian Walton. Christian Walton went short. Dara O'Shea then booted it all the way up the other end of the pitch and it went out for a goal kick. And you thought, that kind of sums it up, really. Another bit that summed it up was start of the second half. They managed to leave the cones out from the half-time warm-up, so the ref had to stop that while they removed 4 orange cones from the pitch. And that was about as exciting as it got for the crowd. Really poor game. Ipswich are miles off it still in terms of being that free-flowing, connected force that we've known in the past. But the main thing is, when they're not perfect, when they're not at their best, they're not now giving away crap goals, which was the case earlier in the season, and that gives them a chance late in the game with the depth that they've got. And that's what happened.
Yeah, it did. And yeah, the surface, my point of view, obviously it looks pretty, does it? Lovely and green, but maybe because it rained a little bit just before the warm-ups or during the warm-ups. So yeah, but I don't think there was any.
Was it cutting up? Was the grass a bit long? What was the?
Yeah, I'll say maybe a bit long. But yeah, that wasn't the main reason why the game was dire. But you mentioned, AJ, the first 20 minutes, you thought it weren't too bad.
Yeah, I think that it kind of descended into a poor game. I think that at the start you could kind of see, oh, actually, you know what, there's little passages, there's a lot of space, Hull were leaving a lot of space. Obviously, it's worth mentioning as well, they had, I think, five starters basically out of that team. This is the best time to come to play Hull. They have only lost one home league game this season. I think it might actually be one home game full stop this season in all competitions. So factoring all that in, Ipswich needed to come here and I felt put on a good display and get the win. And I liked some of what I saw in the early stages, and then something changed. I'm not quite sure what it was. I noticed they went very direct. This was a game where I thought Ipswich definitely did have that kind of long ball tendency. Dara O'Shea is usually really good at that, the way he stretches the pitch. I thought defensively Dara O'Shea was excellent, but on the ball, maybe just a yard or two off it, a slightly different situation. But yeah, that was part of it, I'd say. It just kind of descended into that a little bit, didn't it? And that's probably maybe the story of the game from about 20 through until 70-ish, I'd say.
Yeah, let's draw a line on the first half. That was pretty much it. As my missus starts calling me, sorry darling, I can't speak to you right now, I'm just talking about the game at Hull. But yeah, second half then, Stu, where do you want to start? Because there was obviously a half-time change. Jens Guste had to come off for Jack Taylor. He was, you know, a boot. McKenna obviously mentioned. We'll find out a bit more, I'm sure. And we'll see if he probably isn't going to be playing against Oxford. But yeah, take it away.
Yeah, I think it was a sharp intake of breath when we saw Jens Guste go down right on half-time, clutching his right knee. It looked to me like a sort of a contact injury rather than a, you know, a twist or a jar or anything like that. He got up, he sort of moved gingerly, and there were seconds to go to the break, so you thought, well, they'll probably get into half time and then assess it. And then he doesn't come out for the start of the second half. Jack Taylor comes on, but we're all thinking, given, you know, there's a lot of talk about Jens Kajusta's knees and having to manage them, you're wondering how bad that is. And then Kieran McKenna tells us afterwards, actually it's not his knee. He's rolled his ankle. And he's in a boot, and they'll have to see how serious it is. Like you say, Friday's game is coming very quickly, so I would imagine that possibly even Blackburn next Tuesday might be a stretch for him. But hopefully, fingers crossed, it's not the knee, which is the main thing.
Yeah, sorry, my concentration levels there just went when I was seeing my phone call. I was trying to think what I wanted to say next. But AJ, where do you want to start for the second half then? Because as you say, Hull went a bit more direct. I want to quickly give a shout out to Dara O'Shea straight away. I know this was later in the game, but I don't know how he's not got concussion. Like, twice he got the ball straight right to his head. And of course, I had to like check it on him, but yeah, defensive. And that was the solid foundations that sort of maybe went on to Town to win this game.
Yeah, I think that's probably the next thing to talk about, because the pattern of the first half continued into the second in terms of it being poor and both teams being loose in possession, and we can sit here and criticise the attacking play and what didn't work there, but you also do have to look at the other side, and there'll be people that won't like that because of maybe some of the letdowns in the final third. But defensively tonight, and in terms of the last run of games, Ipswich have been pretty imperious. They've not given a lot away. Of course, there are one or two moments, but they seem to handle those moments better. The players and Kieran McKenna quite often come out and say it's not going to be smooth sailing. Even coming back into this division with all the money we've spent, you're not going to have a game where you're totally in control and dominant start to finish. And it felt like the moments that went against them in previous games, they hadn't really got to grips with. And what we've seen probably since Charlton is a kind of a slight factory reset almost in the approach that they've had. And this was a continuation of that. Hull were limited, and again, I know that they had players out, but it's one of the most attacking potent attacking sides in the division, were limited to very little.
A few pen shouts, didn't they?
Yeah, a few kind of penalty shouts. Both seemed to be quite soft. There's kind of handballs. There's one with Greaves on Gelhart. I think it might have been Gelhart again with Leif Davis. They both would have been pretty harsh. But yeah. I know that there's kind of the whole side of they haven't had many penalties and they've been quite keen to get one and feel a little bit hard done by. But I think the refereeing overall was pretty good in this game. And I think
I don't know. I think there's a few moments where he was very card happy, and I know whole City fans weren't happy. I don't know about Town fans because I was I ran the pitch for the first half, but there was a few decisions. I was like, oh, he's sort of not let that go. Oh, Stone wants to talk. Referee talk.
What did you make of the reception for two former Hull players coming back? That surprised me a little bit. Jacob Greaves and Jaden Philogene both coming back.
Well.
Yeah, Chuba. He's played for Hull.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
first
I missed
senior goal.
Okay, we'll come on to that. But Greaves, you know, he's a Hull boy, boyhood fan. Your dad played for him, been there for years and years. They got a good transfer fee for him. I think it was probably his involvement in one of their players getting a yellow card earlier on where he sort of went down. It's a bit of a flailing hand that caught him and he made the most of it, went down holding his face. And then from then on, you know, all of his touches were booed, which surprised me a little bit. And then Jaden came on and he was booed onto the pitch. His first action was to kind of get sort of shunted off the ball, out-muscled a little bit. Big cheer from the crowd. That sort of woke everybody up. Jaden obviously goes on to have the last laugh with the assist and was a real handful, hit the post, didn't he? But I was a little bit surprised with the reaction for those two.
Yeah, very much so. And, of course, Jaden Philogene got involved in the first goal, Major, and subs are making a difference once again. We know this with Kieran McKenna's sides, the finishers. Shall we talk about the first goal?
Yeah, good this. I mean, there's probably a point. Shu and I spoke looking at the clock, wondering when those changes were going to come because the game, we'd had the first kind of 15 minutes of the second half and it felt like we had no real improvement and we needed those introductions to change things. I think that maybe having that substitution at the interval might have meant that he wanted to be a little bit more cautious in terms of, we've heard before about making sure that if there was an injury, for example, that you're not playing 10, 15 minutes with 10 men because you've made all your changes earlier in the game. And then with this one, yeah, Jaden Philogene onto the pitch. It's good link up with him and Leif Davis. I think that that's probably, in terms of the connections, the strongest left side connection at the moment, even though the Jack Clark relationship's building well. So a little bit of link up play down there. And then it's a really well placed kind of looping cross from quite deep from Jaden Philogene. Marcelino Nunez, I'm not sure. I need to go back through and see if he's ever scored a professional header before. Yeah. He's about 5'8", I think. Yeah. So I don't think if he has, he's scored many. Positions himself in between the centre-backs. I think it's Hughes that needs to do considerably better, given there's about 6 or 7 inches between them in height difference. Nunez kind of ghosts in and plants the header really well into the bottom corner. 1-0, I think, out of the blue is kind of maybe a little bit harsh, but I don't think any of us saw it coming at that point. And it's exactly what Ipswich needed to kind of lift themselves from there. And the way they kind of played from that period onwards was much, much improved.
Yes, and Jaden Philogene's ball, by the way, Stu. Oh, what a cross. And yeah, Nunez, I thought, weren't having a great game, but he's picked up another goal away from home, Nunez, which is great to see. But yeah, great ball from Jaden.
Yeah, I've seen a few people describe it as a hopeful ball into the box. I think that does it a disservice, actually. Yeah. Jaden, I think, to start with, tries to take some people on. He ends up sort of being forced back out wide, back a bit deeper. And for me, I think he knows exactly what he's doing with that cross. I described it as a delicious delivery, a teasing delivery. So, yeah, full credit for the assist. And like you say, Nunez, he's playing as a number 10, but he took that like a number 9 last night. Great movement and great execution as well. And that's what it needed, a little moment of quality. Ipswich certainly have got individual quality. It's not quite come together as a collective. But we keep saying it, if they could stop giving away those silly goals, they'll always give themselves a chance to win with the talent that they've got and the players that can combine that way. And that's that's what happened last night.
It did indeed. And it didn't take long for Town to double their lead, AJ. And Chuba Akpom finally, finally, after many games, getting so close, scores his first Town goal. Although, is it controversial? Offside and all that jazz. But the Lino, done a good job. And yeah, 2-0 Town.
Yeah, he's had these opportunities before. He's hit the post against Charlton. He's fluffed his lines against Wrexham. He's had other opportunities to finally get off the mark and show us the player that scored 27, I think, goals for Middlesbrough in his last Championship campaign. This is one that comes after a really good period from Ipswich. There's a 3-2 when Nunez carries the ball forward into the final third, has options to his right and left. I think it's Sindra to his right. You're thinking, make the pass. And Nunez sees his name up in lights, another brace from on the road, and it doesn't happen, and he kind of rolls it. I think it's a blocked shot with that one. It might have even been saved, I can't remember, but either way, saved shot. So there you go. That was a really frustrating one. And they come again, cut back from Davis, has played through to Akpom, actually. That one was blocked, I'm sure it was. We're getting some nods. So that one was blocked, and then comes out to Furlong, who forces a good save, wins the corner. Corner's whipped in, it kind of pinballs a little bit. I think it's O'Shea's knockdown. Taylor scoops it into the box, and I think from almost every angle in the stadium, that looked offside at first glance. Whole bench livid. Away end a little bit probably confused from what they'd seen. Home end livid as well. I thought it was a clear offside. I don't know how your view was, but Akpom gets the goal. When you see the replay, Ryan Giles is playing him on. It's quite tight, but the linesman's made an excellent call in a congested area. Chuba Akpom needed something to fall for him, and that was really important that it did.
Yes, indeed. We're going to hear from Chuba Akpom as well. You spoke to him after the game, but let's get Stu's thoughts on this goal. Where my pitch side view, I couldn't really see it. It's very difficult. Chuba Akpom, Stu, that will do him a world of good getting that first Town goal.
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes when it's not quite happening for a forward player and the wait for that goal goes on, people talk about he just needs one to go in off his backside or something like that. Almost got that against Wrexham, where a Philogene shot sort of hit him in the box, and you thought he was going to toe it in. Keeper makes a save. I think, as you'll probably hear in the audio now, he says to Alex, "I needed a sweaty goal," which I believe is a FIFA reference, isn't it? In real time, I think we all turned to each other and were, going, "He's got to be offside because he's basically on the goal line." But great credit to the linesman to have seen that in real time. And then when you look at the replays, I think it's tight, but it's clear that he's onside. I will take you up, Alex, on calling that an O'Shea knockdown. That's a hell of a downward header at the corner that the goalkeeper makes a save. It was he attacked it really well. It's a great goal for Chuba to get, and that killed it off, really, didn't it? And then from there, more goals could have followed. Philogene was having great fun out on the left. Davis was overlapping at will down that side. And a game that had been a really difficult watch for 70 minutes suddenly became really fun.
Yeah, it did. It got us off our feet. Let's go and hear from Chuba Akpom then. That audio's played, we're going to probably chant his song with obviously the tune of Tequila. So, Tequila? Tequila.
Tequila.
Tequila. Chuba. Chuba Akpom, over to you, mate.
Chuba, is that the very definition of a hard-fought away win in the Championship?
Yeah, it was a big win. One of the most important wins of the season, I'd say. Coming here, it's difficult to play, difficult to get points here, so I'm glad we won.
And up in the top six for the first time this season. Does that mean anything at this stage of the season? Must be a nice little lift for you.
It's nice, but it's too early, We need to be consistent for the full season, so yeah, we have a lot more work to do, and hopefully we just keep on going.
How nice to get off the mark.
Yeah, I needed a sweaty one like that, to be honest. Every striker wants to score goals, and I'm really thankful to the fans, actually, because there's been games, where I've come on and they're still singing my name and I haven't even got my first goal yet. So that really gave me a big push. I'm glad to get off the mark.
Had it been frustrating? You'd had one or two chances.
Yeah, of course, you start to overthink it and stuff, and it's not something I'm used to, I like to put the ball in the back of the net, so when it's not happening, I get a bit frustrated, but... Yeah, I just had to show some patience, and I'm glad it went in today.
Chuba, I think that most people in the stadium at the time that goal went in thought it was offside. Did you have to have a little look back? Because it's only when we saw the replays that it looked actually quite onside.
I was looking at the lino and just praying, oh, please, because I saw the ref run over to him, and I was like, oh, gosh, come on. But, glad it counted.
You may see me having a little giggle when the boys are talking because I've been seeing some dogs in little coats. That just gets me. It's just, it's nice and fun, isn't it? But we've got a discussion, boys, about Drew Batpom. We're going to speak more about him because Heathie's done a poll on our Kings of Anglia podcast. And that is, still, let you talk through it and then we can have a little discussion on it. So over to you.
Yeah, Mark jumped on the Kings of Anglia podcast Twitter account last night, fresh after the game. And this is based on Chuba Akpom coming onto the pitch as a striker last night. His previous goal-scoring form for Middlesbrough has come as a 10, as a second striker, really. There's different ways to play the 10, but that's where he got all his goals for Middlesbrough. He's come to Ipswich to play that role. It's not quite happened for him in that role so far, but he came on for Hurst up front last night, even as on remained unused. And obviously he's got the goal and there was, you know, plenty of other moments in the match where he was effective. So Mark's thrown out on the poll, could Chuba Akpom end up being the best option for Ipswich at 9? Just having a look, and the results so far are yes, 47%. Let's see him there more, 41%, and an outright no, only 12%. So, I'll throw it back to you, boys. What do you reckon? Do you think Akpom is more a 9 than a 10 in this Ipswich system?
Ooh, AJ, I'll throw it to you, my friend. He's got the obviously the physical attributes to do that. But yeah, what do you reckon? Stu, you went no, just to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, he voted no. But what's your thoughts?
Need to see more of it. He can do both, and I think that he'll have minutes spread out over both of them. Will he become, you know, Ipswich's best option in the number 9? I'm not sure about that. Given the kind of demands of what an Ipswich number 9 needs to have, where look, a lot of criticism goes George Hurst's way, but a lot of that, I think, is aimed towards his goal scoring, which even he's been critical of. But you can't look past the incredible work that an Ipswich number 9 has to put in, holding up the ball, keeping defenders busy. It's a very unique role to play from the start. It's very different to play off the bench. So it's something we'd need to see more of for me to judge and for us to have a look at, because how that would work from the start of a match with Akpom facing those demands of holding the ball up and doing all of that, I'm not too sure whether that would work. Potentially it could, and potentially it would work really well, and he could add the goals to that side of things as well. So yeah, not too sure at this stage. It's definitely something that I think we will see more of, and I think it's something that we'll be able to make a better assessment of in this next little block. You've also got to think about the balance of the team as well. If you give Akpom his minutes as a number 9, then you're weakening the number 10 role, especially with Smodic out at the moment. Nunez isn't going to play every minute of every game. Sindra, of course, as you say, has expressed he wants to play in the 10 as a future kind of aim. But
he played at the end of the game, didn't he? When we made when Ben Johnson came on, he went in 10, didn't he?
Yeah, so there is that possibility there. Then you're looking at maybe some issues around the right wing. It's always about trying to find the right balance within the squad. Sure, you might get the best out of one player in position X, but is that then going to jeopardise what you can do in other areas of the pitch? That's my concern, so I'd like to see a bit more of it.
I'll tell you why I voted no in the poll, and it's the wording of the question. It's will Akpom end up being the best option for Ipswich at number 9? I think he could be a option. Yep. But best option is where my no vote comes, because George Hurst is Ipswich's best option as a number 9. I know he has not been scoring loads of goals, but when have strikers scored loads of goals in a Kieran McKenna system? Even in the promotions, it's not like they rely on the front man scoring 20 plus goals. It's a team effort. What Kieran McKenna wants from his strikers is work rate, is high pressing, is link play, is leadership, all those sort of things. And even when it's not been going for George in front of goal, I think he is offering all those other things. And I thought last night, again, he worked his socks off in terms of pressing high along with Nunez, and put so much effort into sort of buttering up Hull and sort of setting it up for the substitutes. And just because Akpom scored a goal from a yard out as a number nine doesn't suddenly make him Ipswich's best striker option. I think that's a little bit
score
of
a goal starts
fickle fandom maybe coming in. He has got the physical attributes to play. He's a 9.5.
Yeah,
is probably the best way to describe him. But there was some, you know, probably some of the best stuff he did last night was still dropping into the pockets in the link play. That counter attacking chance where Ipswich had so many men over in attack, and Nunez in the end ended up taking it on his own, and the shot I think was blocked in the end, wasn't it, or saved. But you know, that starts, if you look back, with Akpom dropping just halfway into the half and playing a really deft touch around the corner to get it going, and then he got on his bike and was an option to Nunez's right. He did some other good stuff like that as well. So yeah, it's a bit more nuanced than that. I'm not going to suddenly say Akpom, not a 10, is a 9, but I'm delighted to see him get his first goal. For all the talk of it's not just about goals, that will have weighed slightly heavy on him, and hopefully now he can kick on.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, big shout out to Cannon Brissett once again, because he mentioned he scored his first ever professional goal while on loan at Hull City, and then he scores his first town goal at Hull. So there we go. AJ, let's talk about players who else stood out. Azor Matasiwa, what a performance from him. Rock solid. A few little mistakes here and there, but he was able to sort of bounce back from that. But yeah, unbelievable performance. Your man of the match.
Yeah, my man of the match. There are a couple of candidates within that. I thought Jacob Greaves was really good, and I thought Darnell Furlong was really good. Again, we're looking at the defensive side and the players that have been able to keep a really watertight back line. But Matasiwa, a little bit of both worlds here. I think that we saw some good work in possession. When Ipswich looked so kind of almost nervy in a way on the ball and trying to pass it, he was the one player that I looked at thinking he knits things together. If he wasn't able to do that, I think Ipswich would have just fallen to pieces, to be honest, last night, because they could hardly pass the ball between the rest of them. And he was the one who seemed to be able to retain possession, find little gaps. His on-ball work was really good, even though the options ahead of him maybe weren't the best at times to create. And then the big tackles and everything that you see from him, the way that he covers ground, the way that he protects the back line, the way that he breaks things up, just excellent. And yeah, it's the fact that a standard Azor Matasiwa performance at the moment is probably like a 7 out of 10. This was above that level last night, I think. But more and more impressed by him week on week. Whether he plays with Jens or probably at the moment when he's playing with Jack Taylor, that partnership seems to work really well. Really impressed by him, and we'll always look to the defenders about this kind of run of zeros and ones in terms of keeping good defensive runs and making sure that the opposition don't get the chances. Yeah, that O'Shea and Furlong and Davis deserve huge credit to that. Walton as well made a good save. But it starts with protecting the back line. And I think that big credit to Azor Matasiwa for what Ipswich have been able to do defensively in the last few weeks.
Indeed. And Stu, Kieran McKenna name dropped a certain player, and that was Casey McAteer, who was starting this game. And he's become a bit of a scapegoat, hasn't he, because of the price tag and start to life at Town. What's your thoughts on that and what McKenna said?
It's always got to be a scapegoat, yeah, Ross. It's the law of football. Yeah. It'll be the case at all football clubs up and down the land. There's always someone who's in favour and out of favour. Casey McAteer, there's no getting away from it, has had an underwhelming start to life at Ipswich Town. He comes with a hefty price tag of £11.5 million, which adds a bit of pressure. But ultimately, he's just turned 24. He's a young man who's just not been anywhere else other than Leicester, had he, before?
Yeah,
so it's his first proper move away. And yeah, he's not had a run of games necessarily because of the rotation, which doesn't help, but he's not done anything that's jumped off the page so far, and there's no getting away from that. But there have been little moments in there where I just think just give him a chance to find his feet. Last night he did some really good off the ball work, the end product, beating people, that sort of stuff is still to come, and hopefully will do. But his performance last night tactically reminded me of Wes Burns. The way he played that sort of, it's like a hybrid right wing / right back role. It's like, it's not a right wing back role. It's kind of one or the other. When Ipswich are out of possession, he plays as a right back and it becomes a back five and sits right in. And then as soon as Ipswich have the ball, he's got to go completely up the other end of the pitch and play you know, on the last shoulder as a right winger, and that requires a lot of fitness, a lot of discipline, and he did that really well. Kieran McKenna described it as an outstanding performance. You know, highlighted the fact that Ryan Giles, Hull's left back, has got a ton of assists. One of their most creative players, akin to Leif Davis in the Ipswich side, playing that role, and he didn't really get much of a sniff. And McAteer played a big part in that. Darnell Furlong behind him, really good 1v1 defending. So slowly but surely, hopefully Casey McAteer is another who's just starting to find his feet at Ipswich. And I keep saying it, we're making big judgments on a lot of these new players. But you go back to the early days of the promotion heroes of Leif Davis, of Morsey, of Burns, Chaplin, whoever, Cameron Burgess, you know, some of them had some slow/rocky starts to life at Ipswich Town, and it took a while before they became the individuals and collectives that they became. And, you know, there is one or two. We've talked about McAteer, we've talked about Akpom, others that are probably now going through that process themselves, but hopefully last night is a step in the right direction again for McAteer, Akpom and others.
Indeed, my friends. Well, we've come a long way, haven't we, AJ, from that Middlesbrough defeat away from home on that Friday night, the Cholton debacle. Now 6 games unbeaten, 3 successive away wins, back-to-back clean sheets, now sitting 4th in the table, 3 points away
From top two,
with a game in hand, my friend. Not looking too bad, despite Town still not playing brilliantly. They're doing okay, but you know, they're not fully McKenna-esque right now, are they?
Yeah, that's, I think, a word. We'll go with that, yeah. there's a couple of points to this. Firstly, the level of the Championship this season is pretty poor, let's be honest, and that's helped a lot. If this was a stronger Championship, I think Ipswich would have a lot more ground to make up. The fact that they're in the position that they are, having played how they have this season and had the results that they've had, is a strong indication of that. It also shows probably they haven't been as bad as maybe it can feel after some of those results. It swings so much, doesn't it? Because we all felt really confident going into the international break after QPR and, you know, the positive set from Watford and then the Swansea games. That's 2-4-1 away wins and a home game they should have won. Then they come back with the Wrexham game and it's a frustrating performance. There's more negatives from that than positives, and it feels like everything shifts. I know that's the nature of football, yeah. But it's like, well, you know, this has been a bad season and this is a bad run. You know, I'm concerned about where this team's heading at the moment and all of those things. And then they go and they have the first 70 minutes that they had yesterday, and it's a continuation or even a building upon of that. And then 2 goals changes it, and then the narrative shifts, and all of a sudden, well, we're going up. We're going up. And I know that's how football works, but I feel like the kind of the drastic swings can be a little bit of an issue, especially when you've got so many games in such a short period, because Ipswich could, and hopefully they won't, touch wood, go to Oxford and lose over the weekend, and we'll be in the same position of feeling how we were after the Wrexham game, and then they'll go and beat Coventry and become the second team to do that, and all of a sudden it changes again. And so I know that those who are in the dressing room and at higher levels at Ipswich will follow the never too high, never too low kind of mantra and motto, and that's going to be really important, where if Town maybe find it harder in the next few games, of course there's Blackburn in there as well, then, you know, they will make sure and back themselves to turn it around. At the same time, if Town go get 7-9 points in the next 3 games and keep building on what has been a really impressive run, then they're not going to get too far ahead of themselves as they try and build towards the top two. But I think when you look back at those last 6 games, the way that they've been able to reset and say, the attacking side's been good, but we need to focus on the defensive, because, and this was a line Stu said to me yesterday, I think it's attack win games, defence wins championships. If you can fix the defence first, then look at how we can change things going forward to be better in the final third and become the Ipswich team that we've seen in the past, then that's going to be the way to start building towards automatic promotion.
Do you think the Charlton game might end up weirdly being a blessing in disguise? Yeah. A moment. I mean, you look back to League One, Charlton, again, weirdly, that sort of crazy stoppage time period where it ended 4-4. And you have to have those moments of pain and hurt to, and it sounds a bit wishy-washy and cliche and modern football managers talking about the process and going through the journey and all that sort of stuff. But it's true. Yeah, you know, they you used the phrase factory reset post that Charlton home game earlier, and I think that's bang on, that Kieran McKenna says the messaging from them is he sat down with them and said it's almost like park the transfer fees and the talent and the quality, you have to earn the right in the Championship. You've felt that now, you've experienced it, get that solid base, make ourselves hard to beat, and then trust that the rest will follow. But you have to get the defensive part first, the resilience, the organisation. I know these things aren't sexy, but you know, I looked at it back at it last night. It's easy to forget that in that Championship promotion season, I looked at it, I think 5-1-0 wins in there, 3-0-0 draws. You mentioned a couple of them earlier, Stoke and QPR over the winter period, Watford late on in the season. It can't all be about thrilling 3-2, 4-3 wins and 4-1 wins away from home. You have to show the other side of it as well. And that's why I've been really encouraged by the last few games. And you mentioned the run of form that they're on. I've just looked at it. Really, if we're saying it was almost like the season properly started once the transfer window finished and they got the group together, they've had 12 games since then, 24 points. That's 2 points a game. That tends to be the marker for sort of top two form, doesn't it? So they're ticking along quite nicely. And whisper it quietly, it feels like there might be another gear to come, certainly from an attacking side of things. So, not a bad little position to be in, Ross, as you say.
Yes, very exciting indeed. And I've got the answer, though. We basically play all our away games. Every game is away. Just ignore the Borough game, obviously.
But that's crazy as well, isn't it? Because we look back at a few weeks ago and Ipswich hadn't won an away game all season. Yeah. And we're thinking Portman Road is the only place they're playing well, and they've gone and they've
put United.
Exactly. Yeah. And they had the Norwich game, we had Portsmouth, but then they go on the road, they should have lost to Blackburn, they lose to Borough, there are others in there, and now we're looking at the opposite, thinking, well, they're struggling now because teams are coming to Portman Road and sitting deep, and on the road it's the opposite, and they're creating chances and winning games and scoring goals. And it's another reminder of how quickly football can change, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so, Stu.
Doesn't that show that sort of Kieran McKenna and this group are quite good at, again, learning lessons, inverted commas, but it does show that when there is a little issue, periods of narrative and issues, they do seem to find ways to fix them fairly quickly. And I think they're quite good as a group. There is that learning culture, and that stems from McKenna of... And I do believe him when he says, you know, we don't get wrapped up too much in the table and we don't get affected by these swinging highs and lows. For them, it's just every day come in, whatever the result has been, what can we learn from it? What can we improve? What are the themes that we need to address? And, you know, consistently over a period of now, they do seem to be able to kind of fix little issues along the way. And that's always what's given me the biggest hope and encouragement, even when things do feel a bit sticky.
Yes, indeed. And we've got another away game up next, AJ. Yeah. Trip to Oxford. And they did something very impressive last night, scoring a 95th minute equaliser against Norwich, who are looking for their first win at home, their first win in bloody ages. But they go and score that late on. Quick snap thoughts on Oxford as we get ready to head back to Suffolk, because it is getting a bit chilly. I'm feeling a bit like shaky legs. So we're going to wrap this up very shortly, but quick thoughts on Oxford.
Yeah, you say it's another away game. We've got another one after that as well. There's a lot of mileage coming up, isn't it? Oxford are down towards the bottom of the division. They came up, obviously, into the league last year from League One, did well, managed to survive and kind of thrive after a couple of managerial changes. It's Gary Rowett, my old friend Gary, who I'm sure will be buzzing to see me again. Oh, my old friend. Yeah, who I'm sure will be buzzing to see me again on Friday night. But essentially what Gary Rowett teams are is almost kind of what Ipswich have had to do. It's defence first. It's building a solid base and then working into bringing that attacking play in. And it maybe hasn't quite worked as well this season. There's been a little bit of a change in the squad. They are going to be in a relegation battle this season, and survival will be the aim, and survival will be a big success for them. So there's good players in that squad.
Greg Lee,
of course, Cameron Brannigan, really talented. They've recruited quite well from abroad, players like De Kiers, Marco's coming, a Belgian midfielder. There's others that they've added quite nicely there. This is a side that are really trying to establish themselves at the level, but we'll find that it's a competitive division. That's what they are finding, and whatever points they can get, like the one they got last night against Norwich, will be a huge one, just to make sure they're keeping their head above that dotted line where they've currently got Sheffield Wednesday, Norwich and Sheffield United at the moment. Sheffield United play Portsmouth tonight. That's a big old game. So this will be a really pivotal one for them in trying to keep above that kind of resurgent, maybe Sheffield United, you'd say. A team that Ipswich will go expecting to beat, looking at the difference in levels, but one that they'll have to be very wary of, knowing that for them this is going to be a big game. It's big Ipswich coming to town, and they're going to be right up for it under Gary Rowett.
Yes, and hopefully no fog. I think the forecast seems fine. I know McKenna doesn't like to get told about that game. Mark Ashton, I think, is one is banned to talk about Oxford in the fog.
It's still a sore subject. That fog game, that was, could have proved costly, couldn't it? Thankfully it didn't. Was that was in the promotion season, wasn't it? It was, and I mean, that was farcical that night. We couldn't see the other side of the pitch, and the referee, you know, called them off and then was giving them false information about, well, the result stands if it's beyond a certain point. He's still quietly fuming about that, Kieran McKenna. It certainly, you know, arguably cost Ipswich the title that season. We had a torrential downpour at Oxford as well, didn't we?
Late equaliser.
Yeah, that was the season. That was the season before, wasn't it? That killed the last bit of remaining hope that, you know, Kieran McKenna was going to take them into the playoffs after taking over midway through the season. So it's been, we've had some eventful trips to the Kassam. We talked a bit about rotation and squad depth for Ipswich. This gives them a massive advantage going into this, with Oxford having been away at Norwich last night. Gary Rowett will have them organised, difficult, all of those things, but Ipswich will be a lot fresher because there'll be rotation, and for that reason I can't see, I just think Ipswich will have too much for them because of the quick turnaround. I think being away from home actually is probably good in this scenario as well, because Oxford, will, as the home side, will feel like they can't just park the bus as a home team and will have to show a bit more ambition. So hopefully all of that plays into Ipswich Town hands, whoever gets the nod to start.
Tuba starts, hot take. In the number nine, up front. Okay. There we go.
Wow.
So we shall see. AJ, too early to do predictions because we're still on Buddy Hole. Yeah. The Hole and Back, as Del Boy and Rodney did back in the day. There we go. But yeah, let's wrap up. Any other thoughts, business stories from the trip?
I mean, I think we've covered the match well. We've previewed Oxford. I think we've had as many, we don't get as many kind of fun stories from only like the little overnight trips. It's different to pre-season, isn't it? Even though it's been good to do this as well, hasn't it, to record here. We had a bit of a debate over breakfast. I want to get Stu's opinions because he's been, pardon the pun, but stewing over this since I asked him a couple of hours ago.
He's probably forgot.
Yeah, he probably has forgot. I said I'm not big on, you know, I'll eat them and I think I should and I'd like them-ish, but I'm not that big on sausages in my prior... Thanks, guys. My breakfast.
On your breakfast.
In my fry up. And I'm more of a bacon man.
Oh, dear. Compose yourself, young man.
Stu set me off. Stu, sausages or bacon? Because Ross then revealed that he was the opposite.
He is a
sausage man. He is a big sausage man.
Sausage man, my breakfast. Bacon, I could take it or leave it. Stu, you have the final say.
You're setting traps for me here, aren't you? You're priming me for a social media clip.
I think I've already fallen into that.
If I could only pick one to have for the rest of my life, I think I would select sausages over bacon just.
Team sausage.
And on that note...
Yes, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the latest King's Wrangler Itchers Town podcast. We'll be back on location once again in Oxford. Me and AJ will be there to hopefully talk about another win. But yeah, shout out to our sponsors quickly. Molecular.
Yeah, close enough.
Close enough. Another great local company in Leiston, sorting out your cleaning products for your car. And also Stardust Spirits. Good old Gary and the team will sort you out some good spirits ready for Christmas. So check them out. KOA code for them. KOA 10 for molecular. No, that is dreadful.
That was good.
Really?
Yeah, give you that.
Give me that. Obviously, follow us on all our socials as well, Kings of Anglia. Check out everything online.
Get
our new
tickets.
Offer. Get your Kawaii Live free tickets. After a win, why not celebrate with some tickets? At the Bar St Ipswich, December 20th, after the Sheffield Wednesday game. Hopefully see you there, but we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.